I wonder what Scott Hobart all riled up to come in here and... Hey, Abe, put that down. Put that down. It's a... That's an inflatable reindeer. Come on. That's not a real reindeer. Come on, give me that. Give me that thing. Come on. Come on. Let it go. Let it go. Well, I guess the holiday season has officially begun. Scratch one reindeer. Hi, it's Paul Dini, along here with Ezra, and Misty and Rashi and Super Ika are out. I think they said they were going Christmas shopping. It's the start of the holiday season.
Yeah, it's just past Black Friday and all that time to get your shopping done.
Yeah, we don't allow Rashi out during Black Friday because it would create too much madness. He thinks it's the start of the shoplifting season.
Oh, that's
and nice. For all I know, he's right. You know. You can get away with a multitude of sins on Black Friday. Ezra, have you ever been to a Black Friday sale or ever wanted to go to one of those?
I never wanted to go. I think I was involved in some Christmas shopping Black Friday-ishness one year.
Uh-huh.
But this year, didn't even leave the house. I made sure not to go anywhere.
Yeah, I had to... It was kind of an odd holiday this year. It's an odd Thanksgiving for me. I know that you and Emily were together.
We had a nice quiet Thanksgiving in.
Missy and I were split up this year because it was one of those things we had planned on going to Detroit together and I had a heavy work schedule, so I kept delaying my takeoff, and then the dogs needed some new medicine. And then my mom got sick at the last minute and was in the hospital, so having some tests done. So I felt it was better to stay here. That way I would be able to see her on Friday and without having to, you know, because I really didn't want to get on a plane, go to Detroit and worry about how she was doing. And then,
of course.
Then fly back. So I figured, well, she'll be up and around Friday, so I'll just have Thanksgiving here with the pups. We'll watch some old movies and eat some food, and then I'll go up the next day, which is what I did. But it was interesting. She's up in a hospital in near Stanford, Palo Alto, and the nearest airport there is San Jose. Mm-hmm. And I got rent a car and I started driving, and I noticed there was this horrendous traffic, you know, on the freeway, and I'm going like, man, the hospital's only like 25 minutes away, but this traffic is going to take me hours to get through. And I realized that the far left lanes were open, so I made for those really quick, and then there was one turnoff that went for a mile and a half down the freeway, and that's where everybody was blocked up. And that was to get into a shopping mall.
Oh, no.
Whatever the big shopping mall is on the outskirts of San Jose.
Oh.
People were swamped getting it, and there were these overpasses. People were trying to get in that. And it's like, I'm thinking, like, people, come on. No one wants to be here. What is, I mean, you can't want to do this.
Yeah, you hear all those horrible rumors of people getting trampled or hurt or, like, shot because somebody followed them to their parking lot with a gun because they're mad or something. It's just ridiculous.
I mean, I don't understand. I mean, I guess, are the deals that good?
They can't be. They can't. I found great deals online. I've saved tons of money just shopping online over the Black Friday weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're shopping for. Maybe it's electronics, like big screen TVs or game systems or something
online,
like that.
That's what I do.
I shop online 100%.
I bought something on electronic, purchased online, came the next day after buying it on Black Friday.
Yeah.
Came Saturday.
Yeah.
I don't see the point going out.
I don't either. I mean, the amount you save can't equal to, you know, it just ain't worth it. I mean, maybe it is for some. Maybe people just love the experience. Maybe that's something that humankind has kept since the days when a zillion people would run after a mammoth with spears trying to bring it down. You know, it's like trampling Friday. Let's go out and get a mammoth. You know, 17 people will be killed on one mammoth, but hey, you got to go for the experience, I suppose. I just...
Like running with the bulls in Barcelona, maybe?
Yeah.
You just got to experience it, I guess?
Well, you know, there's fun to be had going to look at Christmas lights, and that's a thing I've always loved since I was a kid, was going downtown to downtown San Francisco to see the lights up at Macy's and Union Square and everything like that, and, you know, FAO Schwartz and the toy windows and everything like that. Yeah. And still, you know, every year, you know, we try and make it back to New York and do a little of that. And it's fun to a point, but when you're dealing with jam-packed sidewalks and rude people, and then it loses a little of its luster. If we're going to go see friends and visit people, that makes it better. But if you're just going to go see the lights, I mean, you can drive around Toluca Lake. You see plenty of great-looking lights around here.
You're driving over here, there's a couple great lights on this.
Yeah. Well, in fact, we went pretty wacky with the lights this year. So there's nobody I like enough to go and endure Black Friday and just look at people. And you're looking at the people who are doing all these things. They're assholes. What's up with people? You just spent an entire day staring at the people you were going to buy for the next day. And you're probably not all that anxious to talk to them again because you just spent Thanksgiving fighting over the last drumstick.
Maybe that's why they show up angry to Black Friday. They just dealt with their family. Like, oh, now I got to buy for these bastards.
Well, you know, it could be for a lot of disenfranchised people. I actually posted a tweet about this last week, that if you're a rageaholic, you might want to save your rage until Black Friday.
Yeah.
Like, you just, because that way you can kind of, you know, hide it. You go to the shopping mall, and then you just explode. You're not there to buy anything. Yeah. You're just there to Hulk out and just, you know, just rip your shirt off and roar and just, you know, grab the person wearing the dumb, you know, hot dog on a stick hat and toss them through the window of Pottery Barn and just go on a full-out rage. You know, just break into rage. And you can always, and if somebody tasers you, you can always say, oh, I bought a TV for $48 and somebody swiped it from me and I was just trying to get the security guy. They don't know. Even on security footage, they don't know. It's just one big, you know, it's like people becoming, I don't know, it's like Attack of the Killer Shrews or some hideous 1950s movie, Night of the Living Dead or something like that. It's just horrific. Yeah, I do my I'm done. I did all my shopping. I did all my shopping around Halloween.
Nice.
You know, I get ideas. You know, the thing is, like, I get ideas through the year, you know, and I see, oh, this might be kind of cute for somebody, and I get it, and I put it aside, or I'll throw it in the garage somewhere, you know, and luckily, hopefully I'll remember where I put it in December. And that has happened, where a few things have gone missing until May or June. And Misty will pull out something like, what's this? Was this that DVD I said I wanted last November? It was Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
How about that? There it is. There it is. But April Fool.
I'm a lazy shopper. I just always do the last minute. I mean, this year I've been pretty good. I've got the majority of my shopping, at least the main stuff, out of the way so far.
Right.
So now it's just, you know, the last few, like, family gifts.
Well, you know, my family has made it easy on everybody, and that is what we do is we do a gift draw. And
And
we just take everybody's name, put it in the hat, and around
I'm gonna suggest
Thanksgiving, you know, we all put our names in the hat, everybody who participates in it, and we all draw a name, and that way, you know, you're buying for one person.
Mm-hmm.
So this year I'm buying for my niece, Caitlin. Nice. You know, it's like, oh, I'm her secret Santa this year. Well, not so secret, she knows I got her name. It's like, I'm looking around online, and she might like that, so click, click, on its way, with gift receipt, so if she looks at it and goes, oh, I love it, Uncle Paul, thank you, you shouldn't have, and it's like, here's a gift receipt, okay, great, boom, off she goes, and she can, you know, go to the store and buy something nice, but that she really likes, but, you know, usually we're usually pretty much on the mark. Last year my brother gave me a picture of Dracula.
A photograph of Bela Lugosi Dracula?
Yeah, it was called Four Draculas. It was a horror movie stars. Interestingly, very few had actually played Dracula. But it was John Carradine, who actually did play Dracula in House of Dracula and House of Frankenstein.
Those were the Hammer ones, right?
No, the later Universal ones.
Oh, okay.
Vincent Price, who to my knowledge has never played Dracula.
Yeah.
Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee.
Wow.
Well, I think they were on there.
Interesting.
Well, yeah. And this guy played Van Helsing. He wasn't Dracula. He was actually Dracula. Yeah. Well, it's like sort of, all right, you know, horror guys.
Yeah.
Horror guys, you know, and it's cool. Yeah. You know, you put him up during Halloween. We had sort of a Vincent Price Halloween this year. It was fun. But, you know, fun stuff like that and is good. And then that way everybody unwraps one present. Oh, look what I got. It's nice. It's not like you show up with an armful of gifts and you're not running around frantic going like, what do I get, Uncle Dog Breath? And what do I get, Auntie, you know,
Auntie Sludge? Okay, who's got, hand out the gifts. Okay, you get that. Okay, everyone open up them now. Or whatever it is.
Yeah, you're not just doing for everybody. You know, it's just like, you know, keep it small. We Missy and I said we'd keep it small this year, and that's fine. You know, it's I don't really want anything. You know, I just have the idea of having Christmas, putting up the tree and the decorations and seeing the lights and singing the carols and all that, you know, old stuff, you know, seeing the windows lighted up. But to me, the hassle and factor involved of spending thousands of dollars and making sure Uncle Snog and Auntie Wolverine are, you know, if their every wish is catered for, it is just not, you know, not thrill me. It's just like, you know, let's have people over and drink, you know, watch some old cartoons and have dinner and that's it, you know. Go to church. Go to midnight mass. The spirit moves you. Do something nice for somebody. Donate the present you got last year that you didn't like and give it to someone this year. You know, I don't mean to proselytize. Everybody does it in their own way. But, you know, I think, you know, Christmas is about just sort of a nice time. So just do something nice.
Yeah.
So there's that. And nice does not involve getting into a car and driving it, you know, 100 miles an hour and smashing through the Walmart and saying, like, give me the Xbox. What is the hot game this year? What is the hot toy? You know.
Well, the hot game system is gone. It's PS4 and Xbox One. It's the two new game systems. They both came out around the same time, and everyone's dying to get them.
I actually write video games, and I'm totally ignorant of what.
I don't know what games are available on them. Honestly, I don't know what the big, you know, like what the hot game that comes out with them is or anything, but. Yeah, they're the big systems, everyone likes grabbing, you know, the latest system.
So so it's a new game system, so I guess they're all new games for the systems, right?
Yeah, I'm sure there's like a you know, something volume 3 or whatever, like Uncharted whatever 3 or 4, something that came with one of them.
But I'm sure there's an Arkham City upgrade to go on them or something like that.
I think they're just reporting the old system's version to the new system. They're not even changing it at all. They're just making it high-reser so they can...
Makes sense.
New system.
Yeah. It's like I can write them, I just don't... Mm-hmm. I can't play them.
Yeah.
I mean, I can play them, but I it's almost like food. I have a bad time turning down food. And there was a time about 15 years ago I had a bad time turning down video games. And both my brother, Steve, and I had to go cold turkey on video games as far as playing them because it was just like, you know, well, it's 11:30. I guess I should go to work. Work started about 90 minutes ago, but I'm moving this guy through the maze, and I guess I'll be here a while. Or I'm driving my car, hitting people. Oh, that's really fun. I can't. I turn into a zombie at the video games. And the other thing is, I'm not very good at them. So I just start over again. You know, it's like, you know, level up. You know, what is that? A soft drink or something? I don't even know what that means because I just. You know, I have to spend at least the first 4 days walking whoever the lead character is around in a circle until he gets killed off or drops off. It's like, why can't he drop off this? Oh, I guess that's what happens when he drops off the side of a building. You know, but sit me down and, you know, I'm sitting there with a couple game designers and we can whip up a game and, you know, that's no problem. It's just that I can't play them because it's just like, well, I got to check out. It's like leaving the country for a while.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I'm a moderate gaming guy. I'm not great at them, but every once in a while I like to break in and play a game. But Yeah, it's such a time sink.
Yeah.
That, like, even if I have an hour to, I'm like, oh, I can play a game. And then I get around to, like, picking out the game, putting it in and everything. I'm like, oh, boy, I only got, like, an hour left. I don't have time to play this game at all.
Yeah, yeah. I know that with the first couple of Arkham games, when they were released, they were released, like, at midnight.
Yeah.
And I know that, God, I would have, like, 2.5 hours where the world was playing the game, and usually after 2.5, maybe 3 hours, somebody would have cracked the game that fast.
Yeah.
Because there are guys out there who can just do it that fast.
And they're also, like, just streamlined. They're just doing story, not doing any of the extra stuff. They're just like, let's see how quick I can do this.
Yeah, yeah. And they're just game wizards. It's like... And luckily, you know, these guys, anybody who's that good at the game has got to have a bit of an attitude about how good they are.
Yeah.
So both times when I heard back from somebody, it was like, I just beat the game and it wasn't bad. It was pretty good. You know, hey, I beat the game. It was fun. Are you going to do another one? You know, that was a response. It wasn't like, your game offered me no challenge at all. He did nothing. The first few people were really polite, and that was nice. And so it was nice hearing from those. Not that I, but that's another thing, is like I can't sit on the computer and listen to think what people. That's even worse than playing the video games.
That
was crazy. Oh, yeah. God! And that was like, I've never been really. At one point, I had to kind of give up drinking. Really quick, because really quick, like I had fallen into drinking a lot over a period of a short period of time, and I realized if I didn't pull myself out, that was going to be a lifelong addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled myself out really quick and didn't drink for the rest of the year, and now only drink a little bit and never to the extent that I did then. But I had to do the kind of the same thing with when things come out online, you know, like stories of mine and things like that, because you want the praise. I mean, we're all attention whores.
And you also want to see actual criticism. You want to go, what did I do right and wrong? Or, you know, what did people enjoy? What did my audience and fans enjoy out of it? What didn't they? What can I improve upon?
Yeah.
But the video game crews, they're monsters.
Well, I mean, I'm lucky. You know, it's like with the first Arkham games, people really like Batman,
yeah,
and they really love the art style, and it was really, you know, kind of nice being ushered into the world that way. I couldn't have asked for a better entry into the world of video games.
We had years of not good Batman games, too, so it's such a breath of fresh air.
Thank you. I mean, I just think it was one of those things, like, this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to step up to the plate with the rest of us? And it's like, yeah, I think I can, you know, so... And that was fun, and now I just don't have to do it again. I would like to do it again.
Yeah.
I actually have something I'm kind of dinking around with that I would like to do my own game. But, again, we'll see how it goes. It's just that, and yet, you know, I'll go over to somebody's house, and they're playing, and it's like, sure, give me a thing. You know, and I'll play. You know, last time I played a game was like hockey or something. Some James Bond shoot 'em game. It was no. What am I talking about? It was Halo. It was like, the last time I really, it was like one of the Halos was released, and it just came over in England. I was over in England.
Oh wow!
We did nothing but play Halo all day. It was like, okay, day's over. We're playing Halo, but it's just like, okay. So I went out and had two beers. I'm not going to do that again for a while.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
But it was fun. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't, the game system's changed so much that I just can't even fathom it. So I don't even, you know, I don't even keep one in the house.
I was playing a game recently. I'm a big fan of a series called Fallout.
Oh yeah.
And they did Fallout 3, and then they did New Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And I took a pause during New Vegas where I didn't play it for months on end because I was just too busy. And it's one of those games where you can play for days.
Yeah.
I went back to try to play it recently. I had no idea how to control the character anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was just like wandering around, like my character's running into walls. I'm looking up in the sky going, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I just completely lost it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things, like, you know, sometimes some games are just a little too advanced for their own
good. Yeah. I'm sorry that I never got a chance to do a Superman game. I've talked about this before, but I thought Superman, like, to take Superman and put him in a world like Arkham City.
Mm-hmm.
And actually have him do things only Superman could do, and actually feel like you can watch Superman do certain things. You know, you watch him in cartoons doing things, but to actually have the visceral thrill of to try and simulate what it's like to punch your way through a mountain.
Yeah.
That's something I really wanted to do, like, when you're a kid, when I was a kid, I would watch Superman, you know, like the George Reeves Superman burrow through the, you know, the center of the earth. And it'd be this weird match shot of him flying like this and a tunnel kind of opening around him as he goes into it. But what's it really feel like to just smash through layer upon layer of earth and then come out in a, you know, lava or something like that, or go under the ocean, or really like your point of view where you're Superman and you're doing this stuff and you really feel like, or you're exposed to kryptonite, you actually feel your life ebb, or like you can't control the character anymore, or something like that. You can't get up. Or that was, oh man, I really wanted to do that. Oh, we got a telephone call. Somebody is calling in. And that's not to say, and before anybody gets excited, that's not to say that we were ever talking about a Superman game or that there was ever going to be a Superman game. It's just, you know, going down the list of DC heroes, who would it be really cool to be?
Ideal for a video game, really. I think him and Green Lantern, I think, is a great choice for a video game character.
Yeah.
And I know they did the one after the movie came out, but I think you could do a lot with the fact that he can make constructs and stuff and fly around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and Superman, you know, his power levels are perfect for video games. Everyone has ridiculous power levels in video games anyway.
Sure, you know? Sure. I mean, it would be like, you know, like you have the power of Superman. Are you going to go berserk with it? Are you going to use it wisely? Or what are you going to do? That sort of thing. So, you know, you are the ultimate weapon instead of just having a, you know, a flamethrower, you know, grenade launcher or something. You really are going out there and you can be kind of a badass. And you know, whether you're fighting other superpowered Kryptonians or you're on an alien world or something like that, would it be great? But, you know, it's like, you could probably say that about, you know, 90% of the DC characters. It would be fun to put yourself in their shoes and go running around and do stuff. So it's the start of the Christmas season. What are you doing over Christmas? You got plans? You going anywhere?
Me and Emily were toying around with the idea of going to, like, the weekend before or after Christmas, going camping or not to a cabin in the snow somewhere.
Oh, really?
Maybe Yosemite or something, or someplace that would probably have snow.
Did you see Sunset Magazine this month?
No.
Oh, it's great. And on the cover, it has, like, this great A-frame chalet, which is up near Yosemite, but kind of in the back country, and you can rent it in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
But it gets, once the snow hits up that area, and I think it's already, you know, started snowing pretty heavily up there, you have to take a snowcat in and they drop you off. That's perfect, man. I'd spend all winter up there.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're thinking. Like, just a cabin, middle of nowhere, just for a few days or a week or whatever, that would be awesome.
It's like, there's a fine line between, and it is, you know, you bring in the wood and the food and it's over the holidays, and you can put up a little tree and get some lights on it. And we used to have this cabin at Lake Tahoe, and some relatives of ours had, and I would rent it every Christmas, and I would do that, and I would put up a tree and you could actually see it from the lake if you were coming over in a boat, you know, just like a little bit of a glow there, and it get bigger. And their house was like an A-frame chalet also, and that would be so cool. And Misty and I talked about that this year, but I don't think we're going to get around to doing it, you know.
Yeah, we just are sick of running around and doing things for everyone else this year.
I
think it'd be perfect for us just to go do our own thing.
You do have to say there is a fine line between charming and Donner Party, you know, when you're up in that part of the country. Like, you have to, okay, this is a lot of fun, and yet, you know, suddenly, you know, the radio says, well, we're in for a blanket of snow which could last 3 weeks, and it's like, did we eat all the Chinese food we brought with? We did, didn't we? How much? 4 logs? Uh-oh. You know, it's suddenly like, you better find a place that delivers quick.
Well, that's what I was thinking, like one of those Yosemite where it's a bunch of cabins in an area, probably near a lodge or something, so it's not too, you know.
Oh, there's a great place I know called the Redwoods, which is...
I'm familiar. Actually, I was just looking at them. That seems to be my favorite choice.
Redwoods is great. I've gone up there for holidays and birthdays, and actually, that's my secret place I go when I'm writing. When I'm writing on a long assignment and I just need to get out of town because I'm either, you know, like in a horrific temper and stomping around the house, growling at everybody, or I just need to clear my thoughts. Misty has packed me off there several times and said, just go to the Redwoods and come back next week.
So of all the different ones, that's the one you suggest?
I really like it. Yeah. Now the place on the cover of Sunset is really nice, and that would be like my ideal cabin if I was going to build one.
Yeah.
But even if I was going to build one, I'd probably want to build one not far from a place like the Redwoods.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be totally cut off, nor do you want to, you know, not be in the cabin for about 8 months and come back and find, you know, what people look like the family on Duck Dynasty squatting in the place, you know, and suddenly they've taken it over and they've got shotguns and scary beards and it's like, it's our place now. And, that sometimes happens. Kids go to out of the way cabins and they break in and they just wreck the joint party, you know, so you got to watch that. But the Redwoods, it's not like a gated area, but it is, there's a central, like a check-in area, and there's an office. And some of the homes are real rustic little one-room shacks that, you know, are just a good getaway place. Some of them are big, opulent mountain homes that have hot tubs and everything like that.
The luxury ones. And I was looking towards something like the cozy cabin one.
We've gone both routes, and I like the little cozy cabins. There was one that was my favorite where you walk in, and they're all kind of laid out the same. You walk in, there's sort of like a great room, like a combination living room, dining room, a couch that faces the TV, a cooking area, you know, a barbecue pit out back, and then like a log staircase that goes up to a room.
Yeah.
And it's pretty private. People leave you alone. Occasionally you'll wind up next to a family that's having a reunion or a big party, but then I've not had much trouble. The rates are usually good. And it's close to the Wawona Hotel, which was the first hotel over in the Yosemite area. So there is civilization close by. If you want to go, if you want a nice dinner or breakfast, you go over to the Wawona Hotel. You can eat there. The food is great. There's a market nearby.
Nice.
So you can get like necessities and you're not going to run out of food because there's a market at Wawona and then there's also a camp market inside the Redwoods.
Okay.
So you don't even have to go that far, even if you just need, you know, hot dogs or marshmallows or milk or just the daily paper, you know, they'll have it there. Usually what I do is like if I go in for a long stretch, I'll take the route up like through Fresno, you know, I'll go up that way. And from here, it's about 4 hours.
Yeah.
It's not all that bad. And I'll stop in Oakhurst. And there's a Rally's or a Ralph's, a Kmart or Walmart-y type place. And I will stock up on groceries and flashlight batteries if I need them. And just, I'll get like a week's worth of food, you know, like a few bags worth of food. And then just go in and there's cooking stuff and a fridge. And you don't need much if you're one person, you know, just, you know, a couple of meals and that'll be fine. And then, you know, eventually, you know, you wander over, see what's happening at the hotel. You can grab a lunch. It's not like you're going far into the wilderness, but it is private and it's nice. And there's nothing like a log fire and, you know, you put on your Christmas mix or whatever and, you know, just sort of kick back and, you know, heat up some, you know, hot rum drink and, I'm ready to go right now.
Yeah, totally. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Kick your leg, take your feet off, roll around on the bear rug, bearskin rug. Now, I've never seen one up there, although I can rent you one. we were in a Spider-Man meeting today, and Henry Gilroy was saying, you know, Paul, next Halloween you should go as the Grizzly, Spider-Man's worst adversary ever. You know, like a big, hefty, chunky pro wrestler who dressed up in a bear costume. Really, he's wearing a bear costume. It's like I'm the Grizzly, and he's got a cutout for his face.
Wow.
I have a feeling Stan Lee and Roy Thomas and Jerry Conway, you know, everybody was writing Spider-Man back in the late 60s, early 70s, when they're really stuck for a villain, it's like, well, let's go to the zoo. You know, it's like, he's really Spider-Man, so we should fight other animals. So, vulture, jackal, lizard, grizzly, rhino. Gibbon, lizard, rhino. What else can we throw at this guy? Yeah. You know, it's getting down, you know. It's getting down to like the bottom of the barrel. Well, banded Linsang man. How about... Civet girl, how about that? Okay, well, dolphin, those are good. Does that sound bad? No, DC has a character called Dolphin. All right, how about the Puma? Yeah, that's okay. We can get an issue out of that. Really, it's just like they didn't really work all that. Once they came up with Spider-Man, they didn't really have to work.
We
all
hit
that.
Gold.
No gold, okay. There. Just get who's got the Book of Animals? Okay, Aardvark. Okay, maybe that Impala. It could be. You know, runs real fast. It's like, boy, I better shut up. You know, somebody might be writing all this stuff down. But, you know, actually, this gets back to the question of bear rug. You know, Henry was saying, you should go as a grizzly. And I'll say, oh, I got the costume. I'll just pick the bear rug off the floor, tie it around my neck, and like, hey, look at me, I'm the grizzly. It was actually, they had a restaurant over at Universal about 15 years ago called Marvel Mania or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I have a bunch of dishes from that when they closed down.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow. They had a bar which had souvenirs from the villains, and they actually had the grizzly suit there.
What?
I know. And that was the thing was I went over there once with Bruce Timm and a couple of, I think it was me, Bruce Timm, Dan Reba. We went over there for lunch one day, and we're looking at all the memorabilia and going, there's Thor's hammer, there's Iron Man armor, and here's some villain stuff. And it's like, was that a teddy bear costume? What the hell? Is that a bear suit?
I love even the most familiar comic fans aren't familiar with
it's
him.
It's like, what is that? What is, why would they have like a bearskin rug up there? What does that mean? I mean, and finally I realized, oh man, it's the grizzly. Remember the grizzly? Everybody went, no. And I said, yeah. He's like, you know, just like, a couple of, and they went, why?
Yeah.
So. I don't know. Maybe the grizzly, that's how the grizzly gets work during the holidays. He rents himself out to people at Yellowstone or Yosemite. It's like, I am the grizzly, formerly Spider-Man's number one arch enemy. Okay, it's like number 38th worst arch enemy. I'm renting myself out as a bearskin rug. That would be a miserable existence. But no, don't let that scare you off. He won't be there. The Redwoods is very nice. So I recommend it. It's good. It's a good place to go for
a retreat. I'm interested. Be fun and hopefully snow, so that'll be perfect.
Oh, there'll be some of that around. Actually, you know, the bears den up, but they do have a bit of trouble with mountain lions.
Oh, wow,
yeah, so
that's why we're in a cabin.
Yes, that's right. You will, you might hear some mountain lions screaming, or you might hear stories of the mountain lions are prowling around. So, California's had a moratorium on hunting mountain lions for years, so the mountain lions are back. They're actually right down the street, they're in Griffith Park. So that'll be fun, and I think we're just gonna take it easy,
nice.
And just try and stick close to home for Christmas, and just enjoy the season and everything.
Very good.
If we take a run up to the snow, it might be somewhere local. I've never actually spent a lot of time up in Big Bear, but I understand it's very nice up there.
I've been there a couple times, just more passing through, but it is beautiful.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I went to Lake Arrowhead once on a. I used to go to Lake Arrowhead to go to the Sands Village up there. I miss Sands Village. Sands Village is still up there. They just closed it down. I guess they don't allow visitors anymore, but it's still there. I don't think they've knocked it down because I actually think that they bring reindeer down there. They still have like the reindeer and the zoo animals up there, and they still bring them down to the zoo here in Griffith Park for Christmas. Let's see. I've actually put the word out for some questions.
Oh.
So I think that we're going to round out the evening with some questions, and we'll get to those and see what our dozens and dozens of fans have to say.
Questions from the fans.
All right.
Well, I might as well bring up something.
Sure.
Last week I came across a little piece of news from Eduardo Risso.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he mentioned Vertigo Comic you two are going to be working on with a Batman villain. I know you probably can't say much, but that sounds exciting. He's a great artist.
I don't know what you are talking about. And yes, he is a wonderful artist.
Yeah.
He is a spectacular artist.
Yeah.
And I don't, other than that, that sounds intriguing.
Yeah, it does.
So
yeah, that should be fun. And what do you got on your questions list?
Well, we got something from Rich Uncle Skeleton here, as said. You remember
awesome
Rich
name.
Uncle Skeleton? He was from the Itchy and Scratchy Comedy Hour, along with Ku Klux Klan and Disagreeable Goat.
Yep.
I know my Simpsons, although I'm probably wrong on some of those. Let's see. Or rather, what's your thought on that? Well, I don't know how the beginning of his question. Okay. It says...
Rich Uncle Skeleton.
Or rather, what are your thought on that? Well, Rich Uncle, I think you... I'll have to hunt around a little bit to see if I have the... Okay. Okay. Chad Widerick, a.k.a. Dr. Skeletoid, says, what comics do you read every month? Does Misty read any? I've really cut my comic reading way back.
Yeah.
It's, I tend to, I don't get the comp boxes anymore. So I tend to, you know, and even to get me to go to the comic book store is kind of a big deal, because our comic book store is very good with the latest comics and everything, but they've cut back on some of the bells and whistles that it used to get me to go there, like some of the figurines and toys and some of the other stuff. But I kind of cut back on buying them. So I don't really run down and read anything monthly anymore. When I'm there and there's a new issue of, like, Usagi Yojimbo, I will pick that up, because Stan Sakai is really wonderful. Occasionally I'll go get some Simpsons comics.
By the way, speaking of Stan Sakai, anyone who can go and support his wife right now, he's doing some sales and a lot of things are happening in order to benefit him. So please go do that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was going to circle around to that, but do you know where to go for that?
Not off the top of my head, but I know there's places that you can read about on Bleeding Cool or whatever that will send you to the right sites.
I know that our good friend Bill Morrison is spearheading an auction for artwork. So if there are any artists out there
that
have a piece of artwork that they'd like to donate,
please,
Stan and Sharon Sakai could really use the help now.
I always see both of them at a number of cons, whether it's Long Beach or San Diego. They're always there.
One of the best nights I ever had in any con was going with them and Mark Evanier to see Frank Ferrante played Groucho Marx in San Francisco. And Frank, fantastic. You know, posed with us all for pictures afterwards. It was just terrific. And, you know, they're the sweetest people. And Stan is so wonderful and talented. So anything anybody can do to help them, if you've got a piece of artwork that you've grown tired of and you want to donate it to a good cause, I'm trying to get the word out to as many collectors as I know. I'm going to be going through my animation collection. If you've ever wanted to get a nice Harley Quinn cell, I'll be putting that up again. I'll have to, I'll sign it. I'll do whatever you want. You know, I'm actually thinking of just doing a special Harley drawing and putting that out there. I mean, I'm no Bruce Timm, but at least it might be cute. So, you know, Harley, Jingle Bell, whatever anybody wants. Let's see. So, whom is your guilty pleasure read? Says Steve Mansur. I don't know. There's nobody sneak away in private. Maybe the Bible. I say unto you, it's like, Misty, are you reading the Bible again? No. Yes, it's hidden in that giant reprint of Walt Disney's comics and stories. That's the Bible.
No,
it's not.
He's having an adventure.
Yeah. He's hunting for a treasure in ancient Babylon. Give me the Bible. Yeah, I'll go with that. Yeah, the Bible. So that's my guilty pleasure. Juan Calvo says, did you work on the opening sequence for Batman, the animated series, first used on TV and pilot? No, I did not. I was aware that there were actually two opening sequences. Yeah. There was the test footage that Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski did. It was like a little pilot footage.
Eric did the backgrounds, right?
Yeah, and Bruce did all the design. It was really film noirish. It was really dark and it was a little adult guy, had gangsters sitting around smoking and using guns and everything.
Nice.
And a more sleeked up version of that was used as the actual opening of the show. But once they had that down that opening, I remember looking at the board when Bruce did it. I remember he came in, he goes, so you want to see the board for the title sequence? And it's like, well, I guess you don't need help then, do you? And he goes, no, I don't. And so I looked at it and I was saying, man, this kicks ass. You know, I can't bring anything to this other than, you know, a lot of praise.
So elegant.
Yeah. And then they did kind of an unamended or a slightly different version of it for the actual title sequence. But Allison Berry says, God damn it, you have a cool life. Well, thank you. grass is always greener, I guess. But thank you. Stingray says, Paul, you talk about going to Florida. If you plan to visit Universal, what's your favorite rides from them, past or present, from Cat or Florida? I must admit that I've been to Florida a number of times, but I've never made it over to Universal there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean,
do you do the Disney World or just not the theme parks at all?
I tend to do mostly Disney World. And the few times I've actually been interested in going over to Universal, the people I was with, you know, just weren't all that interested. Actually, Missy and I were interested in going over to Harry Potter World, but
yeah,
we had kind of come on, you know, we're on a real tight 3-day schedule there, and it just didn't allow for it. So if we ever go back, that might be something we check out. There's certainly a lot of stuff over there that might be worth seeing. So, yeah. I have not done that. So we also have something. It was not too personal, and I apologize if it is. How did you and Misty get together? This is also from Chad Waiterick. Misty read my Zatanna Everyday Magic graphic novel and liked it a lot, and really wanted to, and wrote me a note and said, I thought this was really great. And I went like, oh, terrific, you know, thanks very much. And so we started chatting back and forth, and we met online, and we became friends. And then she was out in Las Vegas a few months after that, and I went out and visited her, and that was that. Let's see.
I think I was assumed you were doing research on Zatanna and came across a picture of her or something. I don't know.
No, I mean, actually, when I saw a picture of her, when she said, you know, this is my website, and I checked it out, naturally, I thought, wow, she's real hot, she's a real babe. And but she had these guys working, you know, she had a show, and yeah, there were a couple of guys there, and I thought, you know, I had met Jonathan Pendragon before I met Misty, and it's like, hey, you know, all the guys with the good-looking girls, all the good-looking girls are always married to, like, their, you know, managers or assistants or something like that, so I'm sure she's taken. And she'd given me her phone number, and actually I didn't call her for a few days, and when I finally called her, it's like, why'd you call me? It's like, well, I didn't want to disturb you and your boyfriend, husband. Well, I don't have a boyfriend, I don't have a husband. It's like, oh, well, let's make up for lost time.
Very nice.
Yes. Let's see. What is a Vertigo comic you're working on with Eduardo Risso about? Why does everybody assume that just... okay, well, that will be answered in time. Let's see. Hollow Heroes. How about the Magic Make cartoons and comics come to life, or at least for us to enjoy them on some sort of viewing screen? Well, I'm working on a process now to tap into your brain, to a person's brain, so that cartoon characters can actually come from your brain and live in live the world around us.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't had much success in it. If you count success walking around with a plunger stuck on your head and just screaming out the name of cartoon characters, Superman, where are you?
But we're making great strides.
Yogi Bear, Charlie Brown, please appear. I'm missing some sort of connection. Maybe I should start a Kickstarter, you know, or fund it on Kickstarter, yeah. You know, like I need to, my cartoon character will into creation, no machine, you know, has got to work. But then again, you know, it's like, how do you send them back? I don't know if they, maybe we're just stuck with them. I don't know.
It's trouble. Or it could be like that Twilight Zone where you just crumple up the paper and throw it in that fire.
And they disappear. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that was the one thing about Roger Rabbit I didn't really understand. I mean, like, you're not supposed to ask questions, you know? Like, does somebody draw these people and then they come to life? And then they just exist throughout eternity?
The animation stork brought them, right?
I guess so. Well, Jessica says, I'm not bad, I was just drawn that way, you know? Yeah. So somebody drew her, and then I guess they just sort of exist. And Tiny Toons... Sherry Stoner came up with this kind of interesting story about old Warner Brothers characters, and she said that when people stop laughing at cartoon characters, they age. And I kind of go, like, well, I kind of like that. I kind of like that. Like, if, you know, Mickey Mouse has always been kept out in the public eye, and there's always somebody somewhere laughing at a Mickey. He's not the funniest character in the world, but he's amusing in his best cartoons, and somebody's at least paying attention to him. So I always ascribe to the theory that as long as a character was out and vital and sort of doing stuff, You know, that they kind of kept them kind of young.
Is that why the Animates did that old Bosco episode where it was like an old Bosco?
Yeah, that was the one, Fields of Honey. Sherry wrote that. And it was there was that one, and there were two on Tiny Toons. There was one called Two Tone Town,
which that's right.
About Foxy, who was another old Warner Brothers character. And I always thought that it's sort of like that. And the other thing that made me kind of think about that is like there was an Art Crumb feature he had done about cartoon characters. Where are they now? And he had done Gandy Goose and Sourpuss from the old Terry Toons, and they had gotten old and decrepit. And I sort of feel like there's not a lot of demand for Gandy Goose, but if they were to bring his cartoons back and they were to show them again and kids liked them and there was a resurgence, he'd probably start to de-age or something like that. That's as much as I've thought about that, about stuff like that. How do we get on that sort of rambling? Oh, about willing cartoon characters into existence.
The Tiny Toons also sort of did that with their first episode. The guy drew them, and then they sort of started talking to Buster Bunny.
Yeah.
Talked them through how to make the cartoon.
Well, it's like they're imaginary characters that really exist in the world, which would be like the Roger Rabbit movies, and I guess to a degree the Muppet movies. They don't really age after their creation, because in the Muppet movie that came out a couple of years ago, actually they cut this out, but it's still on the DVD. They show that the villain, when he was a kid, when he was 10 years old, he saw the Muppets perform at his birthday party, and he didn't think they were funny, and Kermit never got any older. I mean, he fell out of the public eye, but you get the idea is that imaginary characters, they just sort of stay around unless they get killed off or I don't know, commit suicide or something, or I don't know. Jesus calls them home. I don't know. So, in Roger Rabbit, characters just stayed around until they were dipped, and that was it. So.
And Betty Boop was still hauling around in that.
Cartoon characters. I guess they exist for a long time, and sometimes I don't know what they do when they're off hours. Paul Dini, aka Parts of Nerdism. Okay, thank you. Let's see. We got a few more questions here, and then we can wrap it up. Bizarro Galore, our old pal Bizarro, says, would you agree that TV execs are just as much of unimaginative yes men and women who are just bitter they have no talents?
That's a Bizarro question if I've ever heard.
Yeah. the weird thing is, I think they're actually convinced they are talented, and that they feel that the fact that they are above the artist makes them superior to the artist, because the artists want to just do the work. Mm-hmm. Artists and writers want to do the work. They want to write and everything like that. And the guys above them, most of the ones I've met, who kind of fit the mold of the typical, as Bizarro talks about it, person here, they're convinced they're better storytellers than the writers. And they have a weird arrogance, like, well, I'm a boss and I have to wear a suit, and that makes me better than you. And besides, if you really had talent, you wouldn't be working here. You'd be off. You'd be J.K. Rowling. If you were a writer who was really, there's this weird sort of hateable arrogance that goes with a lot of these guys. And this has been fired to myself and to a lot of people. I thought, if you really were a writer, like a real writer, you would be J.K. Rowling. You'd be Stephen King. You'd be one of those guys, who's selling a lot of books in the airports, and somebody that we'd be trying to want to work with. Other than that, we hired you to do a job, we'd be out actively pursuing your properties to adapt, and you'd be telling us no, and then we'd be, because that would make you attractive to us, So there's that sort of weird arrogance that they don't consider writers who just happen to love the medium they're working in, are qualified for that job. So, yeah, they're pretty much all unimaginative yes men. I don't know if they're that self-aware enough to be bitter. That I just think that sometimes they pop off for the sake of popping off. They want to hear their own voices and stuff like that. And I will say that, every once in a while, you run into a couple that are really good. And you kind of are stunned that they love talking story, and they love They've got a mind for logistics, and they can really, you know, put together a story, and they're really pretty sharp. And there have been a couple of guys that I've run into like that, who started off as, you know, executives or agents in some cases, or writer's assistants, or writer's agents. And they thought, you know, hey, rather than just represent the guy, I could be the guy doing this. Yeah. And then I think if you've got any talent, that actually leads you into doing it. So, yeah, but I'd say that, yeah, unfortunately a lot of them fit the stereotype, but every once in a while you run into somebody who really knows their shit. Let's see. David Nevis says, who would play you, Bruce Timm, and Loeb in the movie of your life? I think we'd all play ourselves. You know, I can't imagine anybody going to see a movie like that. It's like, who would play me? I don't know. I'd probably be animated in. Bruce Timm would probably play himself, and Jeff Loeb. Let's see. Leonardo DiCaprio, I think. Why not?
I guess why not?
Why not? It's like, okay, why should we settle for you know, guys who are like lookalikes, or, you know, like...
Then let's have Bruce Timm, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch. I like that. Yeah. And let's see.
And
playing me would be Tina Fey. All right, there you go.
Yes, exactly.
Why not? I'm getting punchy. Let's see. Spooky says, would Misty have moved to L.A. even if the two of you never met? It's like an interesting question I will ask her.
We'll have to save that for when she's back from shopping.
She's back from shopping. That certainly is an interesting question.
I have a question that was posted to Facebook yesterday for one of our podcasts.
Sure.
Justin Reisner asks if there's any chance you'll be able to be a guest writer for the new Harley Quinn monthly comic. As much as he loves Amanda and Jimmy, he would love to see that happen.
Probably not.
Yeah.
No. You know, I had a question recently asking me if I was still writing a story for Detective 27. Sadly, yeah, I am not. So, no. It's like once you sign it, I'm pretty exclusive where I'm working now, and that extends to, with a few exceptions, of things that were already in the works, that extends to comics as well. So,
like your Black Canary.
Black Canary, yes, which I actually have to work on tonight. It's looking really great. Let's see. Festive Phil Murphy says, what cartoon or comic book character would you like to write a story for but never got a chance? I don't know. It's like I'm sure there's like a huge list in the back of my head.
I'm sure you'd love to write Pogo.
No, it's Kelly's.
Okay.
You know,
homage, like nod to his work. No.
No, I could never write. I could never write. You know, Pogo. I don't think I could write Mr. Natural. I don't think I could write any of those characters. I think I could write characters where there was more of a that allowed for more communal.
It wasn't just a solo creator. That it was his.
Yeah. Characters. Yeah. I mean, I think that Carl Barks defined Uncle Scrooge, but I also think I could write a funny Uncle Scrooge.
Yeah, because Don Rosa did plenty too, and so did a couple other people. They did establish the character almost as much as Carl Barks did.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Let's see. So Mickey Mouse. I was actually talking to some of the guys doing the new Mickey Mouse cartoons about doing one of those about a year ago, but then again, you know, they started making them themselves, and they were just... There's just really good. So if the opportunity presents itself, I might. What are some of your favorite cartoons from the 90s that you didn't work on? I worked on all the ones I liked.
Worked on all of them.
You know, at one point I was actually hanging out a lot with John Crisfalusi and the Ren and Stimpy guys, and that might have been fun to have, you know, I certainly would go over and shoot the shit with them on stories and everything. It might have been fun to have worked on one of those. But
there seems to have been a great energy with those shows and the people involved.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like you're really kind of... It wouldn't be like me sitting down and writing a story and giving it to them to animate. You know, it's like... John and I worked on a couple of ideas here and there. You know, it's sort of like write an outline and then, you know... Basically, the way you work with someone like him is you... kind of brainstorm an idea, go away, you know, the writer goes away and, you know, puts it into sort of like outline form. Mm-hmm. You go over it, and then the outline is just the very rough blueprint that the storyboard artists use, and they say, okay, if the story is Ren and Stimpy go on a, you know, a safari, you know, they go here and they have this trouble and this animal shows up, and then, and, you know, there's a chase and everything. But it really, the magic happens on the storyboard where they break it down and they start experimenting with it. And then that, and it's fun at that point to look at the storyboard when it comes in, because then you start finessing it with everybody and he's adding gags and stuff like that.
So, yeah, I can see how it's mostly about punching up the visual humor and the shtick.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really, you know, he is right in the fact, like, the kind of cartoon he does.
Yeah.
You really can't sit down a typewriter and write it, because what else is there for him to do? He just follows along and draws what you wrote. But, you know, he is the sort of guy who gets in and acts every beat of his story and massages the story and the characterizations right through the posing and the staging and everything. You can't write something like, you know, the intensity puts into something like Sven Hoek, where he's threatening them and all that stuff. You know, it's something, it's almost like performance. It has to come out, you know, the idea, and then you have to act, you know, he acts it out, drawing it, and then he performs it and everything like that. So it's...
I was just recalling his Mighty Mouse cartoon where Bat-Bat was on there.
Oh, that was really great.
That was such a fun one. And then those old superheroes, like Rope Man and...
Oh, yeah, the Mighty Heroes.
The Mighty Heroes. Oh, those were so great.
In Dark Magicians, in the flashback in Return of the Joker, is the closest you could ever come to killing Joke Death in the family territory? Yeah, actually that is. That's kind of how that's kind of how I feel like it would go down, is like, I actually believe that when the final thing came down, that Batman could not kill the Joker, but somebody else would kill him to save Batman. And that would be the ultimate, you know, pie in the face for the Joker. Is sort of like, you have to do it. We mean so much to each other that I have to violate you in this ultimate way. And your ultimate violation of yourself is you have to kill me. Mm-hmm. And or else the whole world is going to suffer. And then Batgirl or Alfred or Robin just pulls out a gun and goes, fuck that. Fuck you. Boom. And Joker is sort of like... And as he's dying, it's like, and that was the idea. The whole thing about Robin shooting him is like, I'm not going to kill Batman, but I'm sure as hell going to kill you.
Yeah.
And the ultimate tragedy in that, and this is somewhat gives the Joker somewhat of a win, is Batman is such a hard ass that he'll never forgive Robin for killing. And that is the ultimate tragedy of the, you know, and that's like, if these characters are really working toward an end, that is the real, and that's the real way the Joker, his victory is, he forces one of the other guys to kill him to save Batman's life, because they love Batman. And Batman turns on the person and says, you broke my vow, and killed. And then Batgirl or whoever says, but it wasn't my vow. And then it's like, well, then we can't work together. Then you're out. But I saved your fucking life, and I killed the guy who's killed everybody. And then Batman's point of view would be like, you just don't get it. And you never have. And
he just shut her out.
And he just shut her, whoever did it. You know, if it was Nightwing, he'd shut it out. If it was Catwoman, he'd shut her out. Maybe not her, because she's killed other people too. But it would be like...
Yeah, there's that gray area with Huntress.
Yeah,
like he hates her. But he works with her, but she wasn't part of his family.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, that begs the question of like, if it was like in the days of the Brave and Bold team up comic, and he's there with, you know, Green Arrow or hell, Metamorpho, anybody else who could legitimately, you know, take out the Joker or any other one of his key rogues gallery characters and just killed him. You know, it's like. Batman, you know, it's almost like, yeah, I'm sure Batman would not want to have anything more to do with that person, but it wouldn't be as personal as like him throwing out Robin or throwing out Batgirl. And that is what, you know, that's where the Joker holds the trump card, is it's like, look, at some point I'm going to die in a fight with you, and you're going to kill me, and you're going to hate yourself, and you're going to violate everything you are, or one of your own guys is going to do it, and I'll... and you're going to turn on them because I know you that well, and I know that's how it's going to happen. So, you know, pick a card.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, the unexpected death is that somebody else kills him. Harley gets pissed off and kills him, or one of his gang guys, or just, you know, the ultimate thing is like, you know, you just see this blood spread all over his vest and he goes, oh shit. And he falls over and there's some, you know, rookie cop behind him and says, well, he had a knife and you were dying, Batman. And he was going to kill you. I had to do something. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
There's a cop on there I have to speak to again because I, you know, but on the other hand, he did what he felt he had to do, and it's like,
and he was doing his job.
He was doing his job, and it's like, what, you know, you just at that point you just yell at the Joker, what do you think, you schmuck? How long did you, how long did you really fucking think you were gonna get away with this?
That'd be the awesome panel to me.
No, Joker but
lying dead and Batman walking over just going, schmuck.
You schmuck, you idiot, you freaking idiot, And I think they did that. I think Grant Morrison did that. Like, you had somebody, we had Batman shooting the Joker, but it was actually somebody in a Batman costume who had shot him. But it's, you know, Gotham is pretty pissed off at the Joker. Somebody's going to kill him at some point. And they don't really care about his feud. It's just like, you know, well, my grandson was studying hard and he went to school and then he's walking home and the Joker blows him away as a prank. And, you know, so he, you know, some pissed off grandfather, you know, girlfriend or boyfriend of some victim of his is, you know, that's really the perfect way for him to die. It's like, and I did that story too, or I did, you know, a version of it in the Joker's favor where it's like the little guy who's persecuted just says, you know, I'm gonna kill you and this is how it ends. No big fight with Batman, just some little nobody takes you out. So you know, that's, but he can't really, Joker is such a sociopath that he can't really process that. It's sort of like, no, it's my world, everybody else just lives in it. So, you know, just to have somebody actually turn on him like that, if that even penetrated his thought process, he might actually get kind of scared about that. But I don't think he's that self-aware. Whose idea was it to have Batman punch out a shark in Arkham City? I think Paul Crocker and I both got in a wacky mood and came up with that. I actually think that was his. Nothing Clean says, let's see, is there any chance you'll come, oh, we answered that, Harley Quinn. What is the weirdest note you ever got back on a script? This is Dark Magician. No, just stuff that made me mad, you know, like Picayune stuff, and, I guess if I really thought about it, I'd come up with something. Nothing's really coming to mind.
Yeah.
You know, just sometimes this is weird anal stuff, like we don't want this because this will make this person unhappy or this social group unhappy or something. I really can't think. I know there's a couple things out there, but I just can't think of it. So any good story about you being named Paul? Nope. My first name is my actual first name is Pecos, but really? That's yeah. But it's Paul. There's an interesting story behind that, but Paul, nope. Let's see. Watching animated Batman, Superman, World's Finest. Why didn't DC Comics just why aren't they doing that? Well, you know. That story translated into big screen antics. I think you need a little more to it. You know, I think it's captivating for animation, but I actually think that I think you'd have to up the stakes a little bit somehow. What really makes those stories sing for a wide audience is a lot more Bruce Wayne, Clark Kent type stuff, and I think we'd have to add some more of that. Jorge Lorena says, could you make a podcast centered around Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated with Spike and Tony and everyone you can get? Yeah, I think we could do that. We've had them on the show a number of times.
We talked about it briefly, but yeah. We usually focus on Looney Tunes, so that would be
fun. Yeah, we could do that.
I'm still game of doing some sort of commentary for something sometime. That'd be fun. Just a podcast commentary.
Oh, like running a podcast? Oh, like I do with Kevin Smith.
Yeah, along with whatever you're watching.
Yeah, that would be fun. Like, we should do that. I'm surprised we never did that with Tower Prep or something.
Yeah, we still could.
Yeah.
I have all the episodes.
We'll do that. You know, maybe we'll do something like that. Actually, I would kind of feel a little funny if we did a Batman. Because
a number of those.
Yeah, because I'm already doing those over with Kevin, and so maybe we could do it with a Hulk or something.
That'd
or
be great.
One of the new shows. I have to say, did I talk about Detroit?
Just briefly. You mentioned that you didn't get a chance to go.
Oh no! Did I talk about the talk I did in Detroit?
Oh no, you didn't talk about.
Oh,
that
was a lot of fun. Yeah, I did
you
a talk.
You and Alan, right?
Yeah, Detroit Institute of Art. Alan Burnett and I talked about animation, and I was going to take Marvel side, and he was going to take DC side.
Nice.
Actually, we wound up just, you know, talking about, we gave each other an introduction,
just
and by the time it was done, it's,
the entire time.
I mean, here's, my sister did an introduction, and that was nice, and it made me cry and everything, and then Alan spoke, and then I spoke about animation, and what we thought was really great. The use of superheroes in animation. Then we took questions. Then we showed clips. And then we took questions. And we were speaking for about an hour. And then afterwards, they said, would you mind posing for some pictures and signing some autographs? And I said, no, not at all. And then we signed and posed for 2 hours.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, like, we had 3 hours worth of stories. We should have talked longer.
Yeah.
We should have said more stuff. And I was actually, I wasn't really angry, but I was more like, oh, come on. We're just getting to the good stuff. I mean, we didn't even get
sign
to
while I talk.
We didn't even get to the juice. We didn't even get to the scandal and all the other stuff that's gone on. It's like, is there a scandal? Has there been other stuff? It's like, no, not really. But I just felt like we could have answered a ton more questions or talked about, you know, very very little do we actually. We talk so little about the actual process of animation. Usually it's like, what's your favorite story? How do you get started? How can I submit my script? You know, stuff like that. And it's more like, well, what's the process of layout? Oh, well, nobody ever asks us that, you know? Okay, this is how you do layout, and this is the layout director, and this is his job, and everything, and this is how he works with the director, and how do you actually animate yourself? No, I tried it in high school, and I realized I had no talent. So I was better off telling stories as far as that went, or else just watching cartoons. And you know, here's the process if you're going to start as an animator and stuff like that. So very, very, very rarely do we get asked technical questions.
Yeah.
The questions are usually, you know, I guess is right about story and the characters and a lot of why isn't my favorite show on TV anymore, and who can I protest to about that? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm sorry. So, but that was it. It was a good crowd, and there were a lot of fun folks, and there were actually a lot of animators there. A lot of starting off animators came up and asked questions and stuff. I think that's actually a pretty good place to jump off here, and. Hopefully we'll be back next week with a guest of some note or something, and or more folks over. This was kind of a low-key podcast. Hopefully Misty and Rashi will be back from shopping, and Rashi will not be arrested for shoplifting again this year. You know, he just feels like Black Friday, as he dresses in a black sock and claims to be a ninja and steals as much as he can. So he's like, I'm a ninja. It's Black Friday. I use my ninja powers to go in and swipe as much as I can. Yeah, that never works. Anyway, thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.